is the Go Blue Crew. Welcome into the Go Blue Crew. I'm Tyler Fenwick with Derek Devine, who makes weird relief noises upon entry into the show. Derek, how are you doing?
Good. I'm having a probably more of a summer beer, a Bell's No Yeah. I don't know if you've had a No Yeah.
But I know that's us Midwesterners really lean into the yeah. Is that what that's playing off of?
It says, "Ope, excuse me."
Oh my.
Yeah, no, for sure. So yeah, very, very Midwestern. Just a really nice beer is the slogan.
What's the vibe on that?
Light.
When would you drink it? Light beer is okay.
Light golden ale, probably more of a summer beer, but at Whole Foods downtown Detroit, it was like $4 off, and I thought, hey.
Damn.
Sounded good, so I
you
got
know
it.
What I just picked up at Target is some Two Hearted.
Two Hearted is good. That was another option that was, well, did you get cans or did you get glass bottles?
Cans.
Oof.
Cans are superior.
This could be a whole, really?
Cans are superior. They hold the taste better. Yeah.
Wow, that is then a glass bottle, huh?
Yeah, you know if I'm feeling like it.
Same way in the soda category?
I don't drink a lot of soda, but...
But if I were to present you with a can of Coke or a plastic bottle of Coke, which would you prefer?
The can.
Okay, what about a glass Mexican Coke?
I've never had it. I don't know. I don't know. I'm just saying cans are superior in the beer world. That's just a little take. Maybe we can talk about it later.
Yeah,
like we could dedicate a whole show to like top 10 ways to
and maybe do some research on just like what the general American thinks. I got Canadian family. I like to know what the general Canadian thinks.
That's a good idea. Maybe do this worldwide. What are they doing in Dubai, Shanghai?
I am thinking of, you know, my most recent trip to Japan and most of the beers we had, though there were cans and vending machines all over the city. You just buy a beer from a vending machine like it was a can of soda, which is awesome. Just drink it wherever you want, basically.
That's awesome.
There are signs posted where you can't. But at dinner, a lot of glass bottles. Tyler, I'm telling you.
All right. I believe you. I believe you. You know what we've been putting off for too long, Derek?
Basketball, probably.
Basketball. It's time to talk about it.
I think we had a Jewover episode. Is it Jewover?
I don't know if we uttered that, but...
No, but I think you put it as the title. That was your last little edit, I think.
Wow. If I came up with that, I don't remember it, but it was good.
The pre Sundays for you. I think that was the last episode. I think we had talked about, is it time for Michigan to
I remember
move
that.
On?
Yeah.
And then we ignored it for a while. Here's the first thing I'll share. And I just thought of this before, earlier today, actually, because I knew we were planning a podcast. We had a conversation one time, I think it was last season, before the Jordan Classic. And we had come across an article where somebody was already counting Michigan out. And we thought that that was actually pretty ridiculous being that early in the season. And, you know, they go in and I think they lost to North Carolina. They also lost Jalen Llewellyn to injury that game. And we know what happened last year. You know, they missed the tournament, even with the star power they had. And I just started thinking about how we were really in for a basketball surprise if, you know, just, you know what, 15, 13 months ago, we were thinking like, this is crazy for them to say this, that Michigan's, you know, season's already over before it even began. And credit to whoever wrote that. Were they not only right about that season, that has stuck in the back of my mind for a while. And so I thought about that again today, just how bad things are. And it's really just unbelievable that we would put off talking about basketball because back in the volunteer days, you know, it's been a while. We were probably talking about some good basketball, and I know for sure, at least in 2018, we talked about, you know, game-winning buzzer-beater shots that led to, you know, national title-type runs. And here we are watching a Michigan team that's not even at 10 wins. What do you say, three wins to go? My apologies, three games to go.
Will they get there?
No, absolutely not. that two would road mean, games and yeah, then against a pretty good Nebraska team that is going to be in the tournament, but probably looking to make a statement, you know, a Q4 win, right? He's not going to beating Michigan on the road. Can't be.
It is funny that this season and somewhat last season, but like losing to Michigan looks really bad on your resume. I just think that's kind of funny. Like
it'll be under the key losses category for yeah. like a team like Wisconsin. They'll be and it may be the only key loss on Wisconsin's resume. They'll have their wins yeah. and then it'll say key losses Michigan. And the average fan that only fills out the bracket each year will be like, oh man, you know, that must be pretty good at, you know, losing to Michigan's not a big deal. No, losing to Michigan this year, if you see that and you only look at that little tournament resume thing to make yeah. your choices, if there's a loss to Michigan, do not pick that team.
Don't take that team. That team's gonna fumble big time. You can't lose to Michigan and have high hopes in the NCAA tournament. I think that's pretty much a done deal. I have a pretty specific question for you, Derek, if you don't yeah. mind.
Yeah.
So one of the things that comes up on the broadcast a lot, especially games that are on like Big Ten Network and Fox Sports, like they talk about building a team of the future around Terrace Reed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're just trying to fill time and like help us all, you know, like,
yeah,
hey,
I think so.
You hear the talents there. You're like, no, it's not. This is not a Big Ten roster. Anyway, that's been a pretty consistent theme. Like, well, you know, things are not going great, but look at that piece you can build around Terrace Reed.
And it how they talk about the Pistons for us that are Pistons fans okay. and Michigan basketball fans. You know, it's like, well, talent is there. And it's like, sure, you have a Cade Cunningham, which is, you know, way more of a star player than Michigan has this year. But you look at a fan will look at the team and be like, no, it's just not like the roster's there. It's like they just can't win the close games. It's like that is part of it. You know, there are games Michigan should have won, could have won, but it is filling time.
The roster is straight up not there, but
it's not good enough to beat good teams in general
or even
average teams in the Big Ten.
No. So my question to you, is that true? Can Michigan build around Terrace Reed? I've got my own thoughts on this, but I wanted to see what you had to say first.
My first thought is Terrace Reed on the roster next year if there's a coaching change? If he is, I do think he could be a nice focal point with a lot of development still. You know, there's a lot that he needs to improve on. I think handling the ball has never been his
sure.
strong suit.
No.
He turns the ball over a lot. He does get into foul trouble, but there's ways he's improved. So you can build around him, but let's make no mistake that it's not building around Hunter Dickinson. And I hate to compare those two, but that's our most recent example. And a good example of a big man who elevated his game to a 3-point shot sophomore and junior year. Terrace Reed does not have that. He can't hit free throws. It's just a matter of, yes, he's athletic. He's big. I've got a puppy now barking at me.
That's a grown dog. That's not a puppy.
Yeah, a grown dog bark. Huge Terrace Reed fan she is. Maisie is her name, so it makes sense. But
okay,
can you build around him? Yes, but is he going to draw in the talent? No, but I think a new coach, if that were to be what Michigan moves towards, probably would love to keep Terrace Reed on the roster, I would imagine.
Here's my thoughts on this. So first is you don't see a lot of college teams building around a center for good reason. The game has moved away from that. And I know I sound like old man, you know, yelling at the clouds or whatever. But that's just like a simple truth. The game has moved away from that. We have some recency bias as Michigan fans because it worked for Hunter Dickinson. Like, your offense could move through him. But the reason that worked is the second reason I don't think you can build around Terrace Reed, which is that Hunter Dickinson was so much more than just a post-up scorer. Like, you could legitimately facilitate your offense through him. He was such a good passer out of the post, in transition. He moved the ball really well. And he had the post moves to sometimes dominate a game by himself, draw doubles. He was really good at kicking the ball out in those situations. Terrace Reed's got one post move. He's going to face up. He's going to jab step 50% of the time. He's going to travel. And then the finish just isn't there. And I do feel bad for him because I think it's hard to measure like how much development he lost because of Juwan Howard being out with the heart surgery. Hard to say, you know, what things would look like had there been just like a normal off season and beginning of to the season. But I think that's just, that's the way it is right now. And he's not good enough to build around at this point. And I think, you know, that's the trend in college basketball, and it has been. And he's not the kind of player who is good enough to, you know, go away from the tried and true method of, okay, we don't have the capability or a good enough roster to like decide, yes, we're playing basketball through our center who really can't shoot and is pretty limited in the post. It's not going to work.
I'm not like up on my centers around college football, but you know,
you mean basketball?
College basketball.
We could talk about college football centers.
Terrace Reed would be a, you know, hell of a tight end. Let's get that
out of
the way first and foremost. But and Purdue is really the only example you can think of because they've had the Haas, what's some other names?
Harms,
dude, just like five guys at least that in the last decade.
You stack them and they're a three-story building by themselves.
And you can run through a center like that. You can run through a center like Hunter Dickinson, who just can, he was already a pretty natural passer coming in. A guy who played a high level of basketball in high school, obviously. Michigan expected big things and got big things out of him in year one. But when he really developed that, you know, not a true stretch five, he had his moments where he, you know, obviously could take a guy off the dribble, but that's what people are excited about. Terrace Reed's like, okay, well, this guy brings an element where, you know, he can maybe take you off the dribble. He's more of an athletic freak. And again, I think a coach coming in would want a guy with his potential on the roster, but you look around college basketball, you look around the NBA, even the best version of Terrace Reed, like how many teams does he fit on? What would his NBA future look like? If a guy like Luka Garza can't really find a true fit right away in the NBA, and that guy was pretty much a pure shooter by the end of his long Iowa career. It's just centers are such a hard position to build around. I think Juwan Howard was, you know, really blessed with having Hunter Dickinson. And, you know, their small lineups under Juwan Howard just look really bad. So you want a bigger body out there, you know, without any help at the center position. I think it's become hard for them. But yeah, I don't want to go as far as saying I can't find a single person on the team right now that you could build around. You know, you like a Doug McDaniel to stay around, a guy who's just an elite scorer at times. But, you know, even he can have some pretty brutal turnovers and moments. And, you know, academically hasn't even been around for the road games until I think now that was just lifted.
Yeah.
Which is good because they two out of their last three are on the road. But
that'll be fun.
Even then, I mean, does Doug McDaniel on the road get them to that 10 win mark? You know, they're two away. You just don't love their chances on the road. I think they're, what, losers of the last six or seven already now, and I don't even want to know what it is in the last 20. Can't be good. I don't know. It's a team of transfers that I think have shown some things. You know, Olivier Kamwa is now out for the season. Trey Jackson has just never looked like a complete player. And Armani Burnett has had his moments where he can drop 20, and then he'll turn the ball over like terrible. There's really not a focal point. And as much as a guy like T. Will maybe was supposed to be this season, the team's simply just not good enough. And, you know, there's many issues beyond that. But yeah, the long answer to your question is, I don't know that you can build around anybody right now.
That's a good point.
That sucks. But even a Doug McDaniel who can get you buckets, you know, you've got to mesh him with the right guys who can play their own roles because he's a very ball heavy, dominant guard.
Yeah.
And it worked for a Trey Burke who had, you know, a Tim Hardaway Jr. and a Glenn Robinson and Nick Stauskas to kick out to, you know, a Jordan Morgan and a Mitch McGarry who were cleaning up boards and eating in the paint. But, you know, Doug McDaniel is as prolific as a scorer as he can be. Even he, you've got to have the right pieces to make it stick.
The thing I'll say about McDaniel, and this is true also for Olivier Cromwell, who you just have to feel for. Like, he took a shot, you know, wanted to prove himself at Michigan, and I think he pretty much did. I mean, he was in a really tough situation, and probably, like, up and down everything you would look at, he's probably Michigan's best player, most complete player. But a lot of attention goes to the turnovers for Doug McDaniel and to some extent Olivier Cromwell when he was playing. And I get that. And, like, there are obviously boneheaded passes McDaniel will make. But I also think you can chalk up some of that to just the fact that, like, there is not a whole lot to work with on that roster. And that's got to be a lot of pressure on Doug McDaniel to create for himself, which we see he can obviously do. But it sometimes, when it's not working, it just totally stops the offense. A little bit like if Jet Howard wasn't going last season, everything just kind of looked really weird. And then trying to facilitate off of that, I mean, I'm just willing to excuse some of the turnover stuff, because being a, you know, a point guard in this situation has to be like a really tough, tough role. And Olivier Cromwell got it swept up, I think, in a little bit of that. But I think a lot of Michigan's problems, maybe all of the problems, just come back to the fact that, like, when you watch them play anybody, almost anybody, like, the other team's two or three best players are better than Michigan's best player. And it's just like straight up skill talent gap. Like, Juwan Howard has not built a roster to compete in the Big Ten. It relied too heavily on, you know, patchwork transfers. Some of them have fallen through, you know, thinking you've got commitments, doesn't work out, whatever. But everything, I think, comes back to that. And when you watch Michigan, I feel mean for saying it, but it reminds me of, like Michigan's got guys who would excel at, like, a mid-conference team. Like, that's Will Cheddar. I'll just use him as an example. Just not a guy who's going to excel in the Big Ten outside of some moments. Right. Like, good spot-up shooter, but he doesn't rebound. He fouls everybody on defense.
Right.
That, you know, that's a Mac guy at that. And that, I know that sounds mean, but, like, I just think that about a lot of the players who get on the court for Michigan. It's just, they are not cut out for the Big Ten, whether it be, like, their own skill shortcomings or coaching shortcomings, whatever it is, whatever combination it is. I think all of Michigan's problems basically come back to that plain fact.
Yeah. I mean, that is definitely a harsh way to put it. And obviously no ill towards.
Yeah, but anyone. I don't know how else to, like, say it, you know?
I think the way, just these guys, even the guys who maybe would be more of a role player on other Big Ten teams, and Will Cheddar is supposed to be that for Michigan. They just, it's not, the system's not working. The talent's not there. There's just so many.
This shit works, Derek.
Yeah. there's so many things that just are not happening that need to be happening. And the best teams, there are definitely teams who can have, you know, that star starting five and very little depth and play, you know, only 7 to 8 players, even in the NCAA tournament. And they can go, you know, quite a ways sometimes. But, you know, a good role player has always benefited a team come tournament time. And that's exactly the reason why, you know, a Spike Albrecht or a Luke Hancock in the same game, you know, two guys that were not putting up buckets consistently all season, can step up and do that. And a guy like a Will Cheddar can have a really good night. I think that's obvious. But you just have to have players who are consistent. And outside of Olivier Cromwell and maybe Doug McDaniel at home, even before, you know, the Doug McDaniel on the road wasn't an option, like, Michigan just doesn't have a consistent player. And you don't need a Trey Burke or Nick Stauskas sophomore year where they're National Player of the Year, Big Ten Player of the Year, even an Iggy Brazdeikis who won Big Ten Player of the Year. And just, you know, you knew he'd get his 15 no matter what. And sure, he'd have turnovers and sure, he'd have fouls, but he'd hit his shots. You know, he'd hit his free throws. He'd get to the line. There's no consistency. And part of what I think about is Olivier Cromwell came from a really good team, really good defensively. I think Juwan Howard, like, wants to have a good defensive unit. His better teams have been great defensively. But at the same time, was Olivier Cromwell joining because academically it worked, which is big at Michigan. You need to have a guy who can, you know, transfer academically. Is he trying to did he come to Michigan because Juwan Howard and company thought this was a winning team? Or did he see Juwan Howard's connection with the NBA and his ability to at least send players? I mean, again, Hunter Dickinson's going to get his shot. He's at Kansas. He sent his own son. And, you know, Kobe Bufkin, who played such little minutes year one. But he was a sophomore, right? He played 2 years. He basically played 3 minutes. And then the next year, he kind of, you know, came onto the scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, got a shot at the NBA and was, you know, almost a lottery pick. And so my kind of question is, what are guys coming to Michigan for? Are they coming because they feel like they're going to be a part of a winning team? Or did this set of transfers see it as a place where, hey, we'll play in the Big Ten, it'll be against good competition, and maybe it'll make my resume good enough to get drafted? Because I never saw this group of transfers, you know, and no offense to like a Trey Jackson or an Imani Burnett, I never saw them as like, oh, these guys are going to come in and make Michigan really dangerous. I don't think anyone saw last year's roster and then this year's roster and really thought that they would be significantly better. I think maybe we thought more cohesiveness and not going through one or two players. But, I mean, it almost makes me wonder, like, what's the goal for Juwan Howard? Because what he's put on the court this year, even with, you know, having the surgery and all the things that he's dealt with on a personal level, like, there's no way you look at that roster, whether, you know, when he was healthy or post-surgery or when he came back to the sideline, there's no way you look at that group and say, oh, that's a Big Ten, like, championship caliber team. There's just no way, because every single night it's obvious, and it's whether it's being outplayed or the talent's just not there. It's so predictable in the fact that you know they're going to have a lead, they're going to lose that lead, and more than likely they're going to be dominated.
Yeah, that is the saving grace of this team, is there's no stress involved in these games. They're going to have a hot first half, and it's going to be fun, but it doesn't matter because you know things are falling apart in the second half, and they're going to lose by 14.
You can't even get into it. And I think this kind of comes full circle with, you know, the broadcast filling time. I'm not a guy who, like, really cares what the broadcasters say or, like, gets all worked up about, oh, you know, I hate this guy on the call, or,
yeah,
you know, there's such homers. Like, but I will say this year, more than any year, I've either watched it on very low volume or just kind of had it playing with no volume in the background. Because I almost don't want to hear the fluff of how are they, you know, oh, you know, the roster's so close, or like, it's not like they don't have good players. Like, I don't even want to hear any of it.
I
don't even want to podcast about
it's
a
annoying
basketball team that's won 8 games. I mean, you go look at their 3 conference wins, and the conference season is the, you know, the bulk of their schedule. I mean, if we had to break it down to, like, what meaningful teams have they beat, it's what, Wisconsin? Who else did they beat that you could say, like, oh, that was a
meaningful? Iowa back in on December 10th, and
before
St.
we
John's.
Knew how bad. Yeah, I guess St. John's would be
fun,
especially
fact,
where they
Iowa,
played. They played in New York City.
Yeah,
right?
That was a good
Square
one.
Garden.
Iowa and St. John's are the only road victories for Michigan this year.
And St. John's was technically, well, road, more neutral, I guess, with Madison Square Garden.
You know, I'm looking at Ken Pom, which just says it as an away game. I think you're right.
Well, you know what? Maybe I don't know where St. John's actually plays.
I think they
maybe they do play at Madison Square Garden full
time. I think they do, actually. Anyway,
look,
that's just a little fun fact I'm throwing out there. But
well,
anyway,
again, I'm not surprised, because I wouldn't assume that Michigan did well on the road this season.
No,
and I think anyone who looks at the record, again, 3 conference wins, that is
that's so bad.
I don't know. We need to go? I mean, maybe we spend time. We'll talk about basketball again, I'm sure, because there's season to go and maybe some early off-season changes, but is this one of the worst, especially in the new Big Ten with the new teams? This has to be historically one of the worst Big Ten seasons. I mean, and
yeah.
I don't feel like I'm...
I feel like Penn State's had some bad ones, but this might be...
I'm going to have to look up... We'll look this up and confirm, but either way, if you don't win again, ending with 3 Big Ten wins just seems like... It's not even something... Is it the same conversation as, you know, in 2020, hey, Tyler, Michigan and Jim Harbaugh are going to, you know, survive this year, and not only survive, they're going to go back to back to back CFP, appearances. And then in year 3, you know, they're finally going to win it. you know, is would have that been more surprising? Or, you know, would you have said, hey, Juwan Howard in year five is going to win three conference games? Like, both of those just don't seem to compute in my mind. And yet we've seen both of them.
Yeah.
And so the highest of highs as a football fan, as you know, unfortunately, we have nothing exciting to watch basketball wise. And it's hard to enjoy, you know, college basketball as much. Like, if your team was competitive and winning some games and not others, it's one thing, like last year's team. But if your team wins three conference games, there's just nothing to, like, why are we tuning in?
Let me,
especially to a Peacock buffering stream at that
Jesus,
point.
Jesus, I know. I want to give you a quick question here to end things, because you mentioned Hunter Dickinson, which made me think, who gets credit for Hunter Dickinson, you know, in the NBA or whatever? Like, is it Michigan? Is it Juwan Howard? Is it Kansas? Who gets to take credit for Hunter Dickinson?
I don't think that Juwan Howard's bad at individually developing talent. And I think, again, that's why the question in my head is, are guys going because they feel like learning from a Juwan Howard can give them an up? No, Juwan Howard vouching for a player's skill set and work ethic, like, could probably go a long way in NBA circles. I mean, he's gonna be back in the NBA sooner than later. You know, it's almost as guaranteed as Harbaugh to the NFL. NBA circles have, you know, no problem bringing him into their coaching staff, and he might even get a head coaching opportunity. Who knows? But I think Hunter Dickinson would give a lot of credit to Juwan Howard and John Sanderson, you know, maybe not in the same conversation because of
probably not,
you know,
in the same
awkwardness,
breath.
Same, the awkwardness that maybe is now there, or not maybe is there. But no, I mean, Hunter Dickinson was all Michigan. He still has kind of defended Michigan, you know, via X or Twitter, whatever the kids are calling it these days. I don't think he's unhappy with that decision. I just think he made what is obviously the best decision for his career, especially for anyone who questioned it. And so, yeah, I think Michigan and Juwan Howard will get a lot of credit, as they should. I think he will give them that credit. But then you go coach for a legendary, or you go play for a legendary coach in Bill Self, and hopefully make a Kansas Classic tournament run, if not a national championship. So, and I hope that for him, you know, not necessarily cheering for Kansas, but if Kansas won and Hunter Dickinson had a career at Michigan that was, you know, one people will remember, and then also went and won the big one at another school, like, he deserves that. You know, he's done a lot for the game of college basketball. But yeah, I think, you know, Juwan Howard can develop players. I just don't know that he can put together a roster or a game plan to beat good teams, because he hasn't shown his ability to do that by himself. Those early years, obviously, you had a lot of John Beilein guys. And outside of really his son in the Hunter Dickinson class, you know, second son, I guess, Jet Howard, Colby Bufkin, who, you know, he kind of took a chance on and gave some minutes to. That's a guy who easily could have transferred, who didn't play and stick around. So, I mean, I think he's a great guy, probably a lovable coach, players coach. Obviously, he's had his number of issues off the court, on the court, his health issues. I wish it was working out, but I just don't see any scenario now where it's going to, you know, where Michigan can do anything but move forward.
I like how the question was who takes credit for Hunter Dickinson, and you ended it by saying, I don't know how Michigan moves forward with Juwan Howard.
That's because this, you know, maybe we'll talk about beer next week. Maybe we'll talk about basketball, but I'm almost hoping that this is the last time we, you know, those are my parting thoughts, with maybe the next episode being, let's talk about what's next.
All right.
No,
I like
that. That's a hope of mine, you know, because again, I really wish Juwan Howard could, you know, have that Jim Harbaugh turnaround. Just seems unlikely.
I get you.
But yeah. Let's go Hunter Dickinson and Kansas Jayhawks, I guess, because what else do you cheer for as a Michigan fan this year?
We are fans. Definitely. We are fans at this point. We'll be cheering for him in NCAA at the tournament. So maybe we'll dedicate the show at that point to the Kansas Jayhawks.
We do. I mean, we will talk college basketball again. You know, I don't think a lot's going to happen in three games that will make it exciting to talk about Michigan basketball, but, you know, the classic tournament episode, you know, who you got picked, you know, talk about our favorites. Did we pick Kansas? Did we not? How's the Big Ten going to do? Can Purdue avoid an upset? You know, there's a lot of fun things. And that's where I'm at, you know, is college basketball is so fun in March Madness, no matter what. It's just this whole regular season thing just hasn't been my favorite time.
Nope, not mine either. But yeah, we will. We're creeping up here on March Madness. Conference tournaments are about to start. So it's a really fun time in college basketball, even if life kind of sucks as a Michigan fan. So we will still have plenty of good, fun stuff to talk about in the near future. But until then, take care out there. Go Blue.
Go Blue.